Chapter 25. Greater Greensward is a fairly large kingdom, but it didn't take long to cross it on the back of a full-grown dragon. I was familiar with the border, having visited it many times, so when we didn't hit the correct spot immediately, I told Grumblebelly to head north. Long before we saw the armies, we spotted dragons circling in the sky. There were three of the scaly beasts, all a vivid orange shading to crimson, and all larger than Grumblebelly. "Do you recognize them?" I asked our dragon friend.
"I've never seen them before. They must not be from around here. Siblings, probably, since they're all the same color and their shading matches."
I studied the dragons as we flew closer. They didn't look at all like the dragons I'd seen at the Olympics. Even the way they moved seemed odd. The sweep of their wings was jerky, and the way they turned their heads too abrupt.
"Hello!"
Grumblebelly called, but the trio of dragons ignored him. We finally passed the last of the trees in what had seemed to be an endless forest. Below us lay farmland already taken over by the two armies. They faced each other in straight rows with only a few hundred yards and a trickling stream between them. Both sides appeared to be waiting for a signal. "I'd better see my father first," I said, and leaned forward to tap Grumblebelly's shoulder. "Can you take us down now, please? I want to talk to the king in the green armor." My father had to calm his plunging horse when Grumblebelly landed beside him. When he finally stood still enough that we could talk, Father turned to me.
"So, Emma, I expected to see Grisina. What are you doing here, and what are you riding?"
"Grisina finally fell victim to the family curse, so I'm the new Green Witch. This is our friend, Grumblebelly. He's helping us."
"Grumblebelly, huh?" Father said, eyeing the enormous dragon. "You say he's a friend. Then he isn't under a spell."
I noticed that my father's hand had moved toward his sword, but when I nodded, he took his hand away.
"Someday you'll have to tell me how you two met.
And you mean to say that Grisina acts like Olivine now?" I nodded. "And Haywood is a man again."
"I'll have a lot to get used to, won't I?" he said.
"What do you plan to do, Emma?"
"Whatever you need."
I glanced at the knights trying to calm their frightened horses.
"But I think we'd better get back in the air before we scare away your army."
"Then see what you can do about those orange dragons. We can handle Beltran's troops, but not while dragons are attacking."
When Grumblebelly leaped into the air, he headed straight for the other army. The men in the front lines looked like peasants fresh from the fields, wearing stiffened leather for armor and carrying pitchforks and axes for weapons. I didn't think they stood much of a chance against my father's trained soldiers. Beltran had kept his own trained men toward the back, and it looked like he was there as well, seated on a black horse behind the foot soldiers and the mounted knights. I decided that another, trimmer figure seated on a white horse to his right must be Prince Jorge, since they were dressed almost alike. Helmeted and wearing suits of chainmail, the triple griffins of their family crest decorated their horses' trappings as well as their shields, but while the king wore black, Jorge was dressed in shining silver. Another man sat astride a gray horse to the left of the king. Taller than Beltran or Jorge, he had flowing white hair and wore a long black cape. His face was uncovered, and from where I sat, he looked like he might be handsome, although not as handsome as the prince. When the man gestured at the dragons, I realized that he must be the wizard.
"That can't be Olibald," I thought. "He doesn't look anything like Olifat."
Realizing that Grisina must have been mistaken, I swallowed hard and tried to ignore the tight feeling in my chest. This was no incompetent wizard who would be easy to defeat. My father sat at the head of his mounted knights, his visor raised as he watched the dragons descend. The beasts flamed, and my father's men cried out. Horses reared and pranced, creating havoc in my father's ranks.
Beltran's wizard must be controlling those dragons, said Edric. It would take a strong wizard to control three dragons at once, wouldn't it, Grumblebelly? The dragon snorted, and a sour puff of air wafted past us.
I've never met a wizard who could control one dragon so completely, let alone three. Dragons don't normally involve themselves in the affairs of men. He must be a powerful wizard indeed.
I watched as the dragons swooped and veered, flying low over my father's men and scattering the more skittish horses. Some of the foot soldiers broke ranks and ran, leaving the lines in even greater disorder. The dragons were fearsome enough, yet they seemed so odd. Let's challenge them, I said to Grumblebelly, and let them know we're here.
But there are three of them, and they're the biggest dragons I've ever seen, said Edric.
I sniffed the air. That doesn't matter. Do you smell boiled cabbage?
Edric grunted. What are you talking about? Even I can't think of food at a time like this.
The orange dragon swerved and came back toward my father's troops. Beating their wings in unison, they swooped low over the cowering men. Horses screamed and fought their reins, and a full third of my father's army disappeared into the forest.
You're right, exclaimed Grumblebelly. I don't smell anything, even though they've been flaming.
Exactly.
Now, how about that challenge? Cover your ears.
Grumblebelly's sides expanded as he inhaled. The roar was deafening, even with my fingers stuck in my ears. My father's remaining troops looked up, but they stood their ground and watched us with their swords raised and their bowstrings taut. Beltran's men looked surprised, and I saw fear in the way his foot soldiers drew closer together. The three dragons' movements became jerkier for a moment, then they turned and headed toward us. When Grumblebelly flew higher, the three orange dragons rose to meet him, flaming long before they were within reach. After seeing how far a dragon could flame at the Olympics, I thought their flames looked meager.
Watch out! Shouted Edric. Those flames may not hurt you, Grumblebelly, but we'll be burned to cinders.
I shook my head. I don't think so, but you can close your eyes if you want.
Close my eyes? What good will that do?
Sometimes your eyes can trick you even though your brain knows the truth, I said. A moment later, the flames from the orange dragons reached us. I felt nothing, however, except the rush of the wind against my face as Grumblebelly beat his wings and soared.
What's going on? Asked Edric.
Watch and learn, I said, and recited a quick and easy spell. Let all that's false now disappear. We do not want to see it here. The orange dragons flickered, then one by one they faded away, leaving nothing behind to mark that they had ever been there. They weren't real, I said. An excited shout went up from my father's troops, echoed by a groan of despair from Beltran's men. Suddenly, a lone horseman broke away from the enemy's lines, galloping toward the closest trees. Beltran's wizard was kicking his heels into his horse's sides to make it go faster.
Follow that man, I told Grumblebelly, and an instant later we were passing over the heads of my father's foes.
Drawing closer, I was surprised to see that the wizard was bald-headed and pleasant-faced. He looked a lot like Olafat. Just like the three dragons, the wizard's appearance had been a lie. Grumblebelly was almost directly over him when Olabald turned and looked up. I was too far away to hear what he said, but I saw his hands wave and suddenly a small dark cloud appeared above us. Thunder rumbled in its depths, and a bolt of lightning zigzagged through the sky.
Hold on tight, bellowed Grumblebelly as he tucked his wings and dove.
Edric reached around me and we both clutched the dragon's ridge, our knuckles white from pressure. The first bolt missed us, but the second hit the dragon's tail, jolting him with a surge. He plummeted, tumbling head over heels. The lightning had stunned us as well, and we fell from his back, unable to control our muscles enough to hold on. I couldn't hear anything but the ringing in my ears, although I must have screamed since I made my throat sore.
I was too numb to think, let alone say a spell, and Edric and I would have been killed if Grumblebelly hadn't come to his senses and beaten the air with his wings, bringing him level beneath us. He caught us with his skull, a lumpy and uncomfortable place to land. As the air woofed out of me, I knew I'd bear the bruises for days. Although I couldn't hear, my head cleared as Edric helped me back to my seat on Grumblebelly's neck. I realized that even though the cloud was shrinking as it leaked rain, it probably still held enough energy to shoot more lightning. Bending toward the dragon's neck, I shouted, "Would you mind heating up that cloud?"
"I'd be delighted," said Grumblebelly,
and with a blast of flame he turned the cloud into steam, which quickly dissipated in the clear blue sky. Before Olibald could aim his magic at us again, I pointed at him and said, "Go to the Isle of Sun-Warmed Sand, where memories were taken. Stay there till your king's gone home, his urge to fight forsaken." A tiny whirlwind sprang up under the horse's hooves, growing until it engulfed both horse and rider. I watched as the swirling wind rose from the ground and carried them away. When Edric spoke, his voice was faint in my still ringing ears. "It looks as though the fighting has started without us." While fleeing the storm cloud, we had flown over the forest, leaving the battlefield behind. I turned and saw that the archers had sent their first volleys into the opposing army's ranks. Men had already fallen, and more fell as we watched, cut down by the iron arrowheads. I had to do something fast. People's lives were at stake, and one of those lives was my own father's. "I have to stop this," I said. Although Grumblebelly circled above the battlefield, no one on the ground seemed to notice us.
"I could fry them if you'd like," the dragon suggested, and his belly began to grumble.
"No," I said. "I don't want you to hurt them either." Edric tapped my shoulder.
"What kind of magic did the Green Witch use in the tapestry?" he asked. "Maybe you could do something like that."
"I don't know what she did. I'm going to have to come up with something on my own."
Wait a minute.
A bizarre picture had popped into my head. I couldn't keep from laughing. A deep-down belly laugh that made Grumblebelly snort blue flame and turn his head to look at me in surprise. It was loud, and I know I sounded strange, but it wasn't anything I could control. I had just had the most wonderful, impossible, amazing idea.
"What's so funny?" demanded Edric when I'd started to calm down.
"You'll see," I said, wiping tears from my eyes. "Just sit back and give me some room. First of all, I need a way to deliver a spell. Pointing my finger from up here wouldn't work very well. How about this?" I used my hands to shape a ball bigger than a witch's light. Although I hadn't asked it to be, the ball turned out to be green. "Now to add the right spell. And I think this one is perfect. Strangers came to steal our land, to take what they could carry. They're free to go if they leave now, as long as they don't tarry. If they stay to fight a war, they'll have to pay a price. While they remain upon our land, they'll live as frogs or mice."
"You're turning an entire army into frogs or mice?" asked Edric.
"Not the whole army," I said. "Just enough so they'll get the point. Grumblebelly, would you mind flying lower? Right over Beltran's army would be fine." While the dragon swooped and turned, I tossed the ball as hard as I could, aiming for the center of the front line. The ball glittered as it fell, and some soldiers in the back shot arrows at it but missed. Grumblebelly flamed and turned the arrows to ash before they could hurt anyone. When the ball hit the ground, it exploded in a shower of green droplets. The men closest to it disappeared immediately. Then the men next in line disappeared as well. My father's men cheered as an ever-widening green circle devastated the front lines. It looked as though Beltran's men had simply vanished. It wasn't until the soldiers behind them pointed at the ground and began hopping around like they'd suddenly lost their minds that I knew that my spell had worked. Grumblebelly flew lower, and I saw that the ground was swarming with brown mice.
Although the frogs blended in with the spreading green magic, I thought I saw a few of them as well.
Good, I said. Now, let's go see King Beltran.
The king might listen to you better if you go armed, warned Edric. I nodded and hurried through the spell, making another green ball. Grumblebelly flapped his wings, creating a wind that knocked over a half dozen foot soldiers. The archers raised their bows, but he ignored them and soared past the army before they could let any arrows fly. The clanking of armor was loud when the knights turned to face us, but Grumblebelly began puffing smoke the moment he landed, and the knights seemed reluctant to engage an angry dragon. I could see only a little of the king's face beneath his helmet, since the metal came low over his brow and the nose piece covered his nose. He was an old man with a short beard and thin lips, and his eyes were two dark smudges against a face turned pale. Jorge sat beside him, his long blonde curls peeking out from under his helmet, his deep blue eyes watching me with disdain.
King Beltran, I announced. I am the Green Witch and protector of Greater Greensward. I demand that you leave our land at once.
The mounted knights muttered, their horses shifting restlessly, but the king raised his hand and the voices stilled.
If you leave now, I said, you may go home, but each man who stays to fight will turn into a frog or a mouse.
What about the men you've already changed? Asked the king.
Take them with you. They'll turn back into men once they cross the border into your kingdom.
Don't believe her, father, said Prince Jorge. That's Emeralda, the princess you insisted I marry. I've seen the Green Witch, and she's older than that girl.
Hello, Jorge, I said.
Your highness to you, he said, his nostrils flaring. You were lucky that I was willing to marry you, but you were too stupid to know it. Is that the commoner who carried you off?
I'm not a commoner, and I didn't carry her off.
Edric sounded indignant.
I'm as much a prince as you are, Jorge, and I'll have you know that I'm going to marry Emma.
Jorge took off his helmet.
Prince Edric? Is that you? I thought you looked familiar. Where did you get a dragon? I don't suppose you'd sell it. I'd look marvelous on a beast like that.
Grumblebelly's stomach rumbled, and smoke trickled out his nostrils.
Dragons aren't for sale, I said as his muscles tensed under me.
Then we have nothing more to talk about, Jorge said,
setting his helmet back on his head.
You can still marry him, girl, said King Beltran. If your father gives me enough land, I'd be willing to ignore your foolishness.
I didn't want to marry your son before, and I certainly don't want to marry him now. You'd better leave and never come back. I'm watching over this kingdom, and you aren't welcome here.
I see, said the king. Then you leave me no choice but to use force to change your mind.
Turning to the knights behind him, Beltran raised his hand and nodded. Without bothering to look at us again, the king and his son trotted toward the forest. Once the king was out of the way, his knights lifted their swords and urged their horses forward.
I wish I'd brought Ferdy, but I didn't think I needed him when we went to the swamp, said Edric. That's all right. I'm the one who's armed this time. These people don't seem to believe in magic unless it happens to them. I guess I'll have to give them a taste. Grumblebelly, I think it would have a greater impact from the air.
Snorting again, the dragon pumped his wings, and we rose above their heads, making the horses rear. A few of the knights slid off their horses' backs to the ground, where they lay struggling under their armor's weight. We hadn't gone far when archers began to shoot at us, so I didn't hesitate before throwing the next ball. It landed in the midst of the knights, and I was pleased to see that it didn't affect the horses, although their riders disappeared into the depths of their armor. King Beltran and Prince Jorge had already moved out of my weapon's range and were fleeing the field when Grumblebelly flew after them.
And what about you? I called while shaping another green ball with my hands.
We'll go, shouted the king. Just leave us alone and let us gather our men.
Very well, I said. You have 1 hour to collect your soldiers. Resting the ball between Grumblebelly's spikes, I leaned back against Edric while the dragon's enormous wings carried us higher.
Should I take you home now?
Asked Grumblebelly, swerving over the remaining soldiers. Not yet, if you don't mind. I think we'd better stay and make sure they really do leave. I need to talk to my father, too. I'm sure he'd like to know what's happened. We were higher than the treetops when Edric and I leaned over to watch the soldiers scurrying about, collecting frogs and mice in their helmets and on their shields. I wonder how many will actually make it home, said Edric. I shrugged. I don't know, but life as a frog isn't too bad. Squirming in my seat, I turned to face him. I'm sorry if I seem to take you for granted sometimes. I dragged you into some awful predicaments, but you've helped me more than I could have dreamed possible. I appreciate everything you've done.
Enough to give me a kiss?
I said. The kiss was long and loving, and I enjoyed every second of it. After a time, Edric pulled away to murmur, "You're wrong about one thing. Those were adventures, not predicaments. I like adventures, and maybe that's one of the reasons I'm crazy about you. When you're around, I never know what's going to happen next."
The end.